This is the Mixed Coach Podcast, episode number 42. We're going to talk about workflow when you master your own mixes and what you should do and the things you should look out for.
Welcome to the Mixed Coach Podcast, the podcast dedicated to making your next recording your best recording. Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Hey, John, good to see you.
Yep. Question this week, I got to thinking about it. We've talked quite a bit about this, you know, you and I, where a lot of times nowadays mixers end up mastering some of their own stuff. A lot of times, you know, the mixing and the mastering happens in the same step of the process. So keeping that in mind, when in your workflow, if you have to master, if it's not going to go to master after you, then when in the workflow do you start your mastering? When do you do it? Do you keep in mind all the way through, or just, you know?
Well, I think either approach really works, really. The way I do it, though, is I usually master as I go, honestly.
Okay.
Because, I'm an advocate of having templates and having a methodology or a workflow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a word that you'll hear on Mixed Coach a lot, is workflow. But my workflow contains templates which have a mastering plugin across the two mix.
Okay.
But it's not working very hard. So I usually use Isotope. I'm sure if you've heard any of these podcasts, you know that I use Isotope Ozone, and I think it's fantastic. I also use the Massey L2007, usually not together, usually one or the other,
mm-hmm.
depending on how much processing I feel like it needs.
Right.
But I usually master as I go. Another school of thought is that you should master after the fact as a separate event almost.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if you master as you go, then you can really A/B to commercial mixes more readily and fix it. You can be a little bit more nimble about your mix. If you have plenty of time, you know, it might make sense to treat it as two separate processes, but I usually have to fly through my mixes so fast that I'm working with templates and usually I know how hard that I need to hit my mastering plugin, and I try not to abuse it too much. But
okay,
you know, we just had a mixing contest a couple of weeks ago on Mixed Coach Member,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things I noticed was that people tend to abuse mastering limiters too much.
Okay.
You know, I've made this analogy before, maybe on a podcast, and maybe it was just some feedback that I gave on the forum, I'm not sure. But you ever use that stuff called great stuff? You know, where you fill gaps or holes.
Yep.
You know, you feel like if you have a hole in your foundation or something like that,
mm-hmm.
or around a door, you squirt it in. Well, limiting on a master bus is like that. Have you ever used it before?
Great stuff?
Yeah, the great stuff.
Yeah, every once in a while.
Did you use too much the first time?
Probably, yeah. I mean, it kind of went everywhere. So,
yeah. Even though it's on the label and everything, you know, you find a little hole and you go, and you put just a little bit in, you go, that can't be enough.
Right.
And you keep squirting it in there until you start to see it coming out.
Yeah.
And then it starts to come out the hole and it just keeps bleeding out.
Yep.
And it's like the next thing you know, you've got a big mess. Well, mastering or limiting on your master bus is a lot the same way, because it's really, really easy to use too much of it.
Yeah.
And, I mentioned last week on the podcast or the last episode that I was talking to Louis Diaz about mastering. And, you know, me learning from the guys that are on Mix Coach, this is another example of it. He had clearly a great sounding mix, and he didn't use any limiting at all on the master bus, which I thought was interesting. He only used the API 2500 and tape compression, but no limiting. And if you listen to his mixes compared to some other mixes, there was a lot of mastering limiting on there. And you know, if you have too much mastering on there, if your limiter is working too hard, things about your mix get swallowed up by other things about the mix. Like on the Randy Sherry Miller mix that we just finished on Mixed Coach Member, there was a 16th note snare fill going into the second chorus, but there was singing at the same time.
Mm.
And I would jump ahead to that spot right there and listen to see if the vocals disappeared, because if they did, it was because they were using too much mastering limiting, because you know, those snares are very transient. Vocals are very average not the quality of the vocals, but the level of the vocals.
Right.
And the snare would always eat it up. And I would always know, and any, you know, it's one of those things where if you ask, what kind of limiter are you using on the master bus, it's usually an indicator, and we'll cover this in another podcast episode, but it's usually an indicator that it's too much.
Too much, yeah.
So I usually do that just so that if I have too much limiting on my mix, it's obvious that's the case, and I can fix it by either turning the snare fill down, turning the vocals up, or turning down the limiter a little bit more. But, you know, when you just slap on a limiter at the end of a mix, you can really change the sound of a mix in that way. So that's why I use it along the way. And even my mastering engineer that I use, Alan Silverman at ARF Digital in New York, I've asked him before, you know, do you mind me, you know, hitting the limiter too much? And, you know, we've gone back and forth a little bit, but basically we have it down to a place where he doesn't mind how much I do it, because evidently I don't do it too much, and it leaves him a little room. If I do send it to him, I don't limit it at all.
Okay.
I just compress it a little bit and just make sure my levels are as hot as they can be. But
okay.
Anyway, that's my workflow as far as mastering as I mix.
Great.
But I would love to hear some more feedback from some of you guys about how do you do it?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you do it?
How do I do it?
How do you do it, John?
Oh, I mean, it's just a lot of times I'll do it as I go. I keep in mind, you know, and I don't do any, you know, hard limiting while I'm doing the mix of it. Because a lot of times that'll just, like you said, it'll change the sound. So I kind of have it on the master bus as I go, and I just kind of mix through it. If I do any mastering after the fact, a lot of times I'll print my tracks, then pull it in and pull it into a session and then listen to it with some maybe light limiting on it at that point, where it's just basically keeping it below, making sure there's no crazy peaks, making sure there's nothing just out of the ordinary, especially if there's a song that either slowly builds and has a lot of dynamics that way.
Mm-hmm.
Just making sure that nothing really, you know, on the loud side of things gets you know, out of control. So, I mean, if there's any limiting, it's usually after the fact. It's usually, you know, just in addition to.
A good way to look at a limiter on the mastering, on the master bus, is just the safety net. Didn't let that peak get through.
Right.
And a lot of times you can set up and again, I learned this on my own forum, where Louis was telling me the other night when I interviewed him that he didn't use any limiting. He only used the Waves L2 limiter, but it was set all the way to zero and the output was set to -1. You know, we talked about this a few weeks ago where, you know, especially when you have MP3s, how it's good to leave a dB of headroom there. Well, that's exactly what he did. He set his output to -1 and the limiter threshold at zero. So only like freakishly loud peaks would get through. So it really didn't do anything but protect the output from getting too hot.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good way to approach it.
Absolutely. And I've been working on an article about why that, you know, leaving it at -1 dB is always, you know, it's always good to do that. And it's good to make sure that, you know, because whenever MP3s convert, they usually have intersample peaks and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that'll be up on, you know, Mix Coach member in the next, you know, couple weeks or so.
Cool. And we also, there's a podcast, and I can't remember the number of it, but maybe we can put it in the show notes.
Yes.
And there's a podcast that covers that, how you should, leave a dB of headroom on MP3s and why.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. Well, cool. Well, I think we covered it. I think maybe next week we'll end up talking a little bit about mastering again. So, awesome. I was wanting to kind of do a series here, so we'll kind of talk a little bit more about a couple of specific things.
Okay,
so,
cool.
Anyway, we'll see you guys next week.
Hey, if you want to be a part of the coolest mixing community around, guys that really know their stuff about mixing and who are really helpful and friendly and give you feedback on your mixes, plus downloadable mix sessions that you can mix at your own pace and get feedback from those same guys on the forum, you really need to check out Mix Coach Member. Just go to mixcoachmember.com to get the details, okay? See ya.